FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This is your Friday follow-up for Season 12, Episode 4, The Interview. Zach and I are back from our assignment, and Janet is joining us all the way from beautiful Hollywood. How you guys doing?
Great. Welcome back, guys.
I'm here. I'm sunburnt, but I'm okay.
Zach's leaving shards of skin all over the studio floor right now. This is peeling off of his arms. In this week's episode, we had Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott on to give a forensic psychologist analysis of Robert Pape's interview, and I want to reiterate again that the main purpose of doing so was not because we were looking at suspects, it's not because we were looking to see who was guilty or not guilty, but we're trying to piece together Becky's timeline, and Robert, whether he did or did not go hiking with her, is an integral part of that timeline. So we got a lot of great opinions from Dr. Shiloh and Dr. Scott. Can't wait to hear what Zach and Janet have to say. Plus, all of your questions and comments right after the break.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've seen the film. You know the game. Now, Jumanji just got real. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Featuring Daredevil Dad, Mom on a Mission, and the kids who can't wait to ride the world's first Jumanji roller coaster. An epic adventure awaits. World of Jumanji, only at Chessington World of Adventures. Book this summer's must-do day out at Chessington.com.
All righty, we are up and running on the YouTube Live. We've got a ton of comments going on there. Janet, take it away.
All right. Well, first of all, welcome back. We took off a week from both a regular episode and a follow-up episode. You two were on assignment, so that's right. I hope that very important work you were doing on assignment went well. Care to weigh in on that?
I'd like to know either in the YouTube chat or even on social media later. Let us know. We're working on. We've been talking about a new merch line, and Zach had the great idea that we should make a T-shirt that says "Truth and Justice on Assignment." with possibly some palm trees and drink glasses on them. So let us know if you would if you'd be in for buying a T-shirt that says "On Assignment, Truth and Justice."
I mean, I wear it for sure.
I think it's a good idea.
Absolutely. Yep.
The three items we're thinking about are the On Assignment T-shirt, and then the Outsiders, and then one that says "Not the Captain."
I like the "Not the Captain" one.
Yeah. Yeah. We thought about getting one of those for me for Crime Con and one for Zach that says "Not Bob."
That's great.
the assignment went very well. We had a great time. And I want to know what you guys thought about this breakdown analysis. I listened back through because I recorded it 2 weeks ago, so I listened back through and I thought it was a great discussion. Really, Dr. Scott and Dr. Shiloh got me thinking, and the process of going through that with them helped me do a more thorough analysis of it, and I feel much more comfortable about the interview now that I've done that. So what did you guys think?
I loved it. It was really nice to hear them break it down. I thought it was really interesting. They brought up some aspects that I don't really think about. I'm not in that field. I don't think about it, you know. Dr. Scott mentioned several times about like the micro expressions, mm-hmm. which he found was really interesting. You know, he wishes there was a camera on them,
right?
Which is something I didn't know anything about. I mean, do you actually know anything about micro expressions?
I've read about them, but I as I said in the interview, I couldn't possibly analyze them. I've just read that I know they're a thing.
Yeah, it seems real sketchy and weird to me, but I believe it's a science, and I believe it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I, like all people representing Hollywood, mostly know it because there was a show called Lie to Me that was all about like microexpressions and some fictitious expert who could tell when someone was lying based on these tiny microexpressions. But I had also heard something about the doctors that Dr. Scott was talking about who do that marriage counseling and sort of do those predictions, which I do think is really interesting. Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great. I mean, of course, I was tuned out. I didn't hear most of it, but I heard myself name dropped. So I kind of tuned in for a second. That right, felt great. Went ahead and tuned out again. No, I really liked it. I think we've got some really, really great feedback from listeners. And some of them agree with me, which is, you know, you sort of dangle this one analysis of one interview. It's really hard not to want to know what they think of further interviews and stuff. You know, it's I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into more of that. Before we get into listener questions, each individual, I'll go with you first, Zach, is after hearing Robert's interview and hearing the doctor's analysis and my analysis, what are your thoughts? Do you think that the hike happened or did it get canceled?
You know, I'm on the fence about it still, I guess, but I would say I'm leaning to the fact that it got canceled. There's a lot there that kind of indicates that it got canceled. You know, there's some things they picked up on about him, about they really felt he was telling the truth. You know, I'm not a specialist. I can't break this down. I can just hear the way I hear it and the way I feel. I really appreciated that you brought it to him unbiased and didn't let them have any research and just like let them break down what they saw. But also, I kind of wonder how they would have processed it had they had a little more information. Because there was a few points that I'm like, I felt like they started to break down the story a little bit rather than his expressions and the way in the verbiage he was using. And I don't know how I felt about that part of it.
Yeah, I go back and forth with that whenever I'm bringing an expert in. And in this case, I decided I know, obviously, a lot about the case. Not everything about it. I'm still, you know, going through it with you guys in real time, but I'm a little ahead of you. And I always worry, as objective as I always try to be, especially doing an analysis like this, you always worry that you let some of that bias sink in without even realizing it. And so I really wanted, and this one was super important to me, to find out, like, what do they think about, you know, did he cancel that hike or not? And I wanted them to judge. There was a lot more we got into, but the big thing for me was I want them to look without knowing anything else. Do you see indicators that this person is lying? Period. It doesn't matter about what or anything else. Do you see indicators that he's lying? Do you see indicators? And then later, you know, the discussion, I start to feed them a little more and talk about things that were leaked out or weren't leaked out throughout the interview. But that was the main point, was for the main primary goal for that is I wanted to know, did they see any indicators of deception or that he was being truthful?
Yeah. And they both felt like that he seemed sort of guileless, that he just sort of seemed like that was, I think, a lack of awareness was a term that Dr. Scott used, was just sort of.
Yeah.
The idea of him being able to come off as being that sort of not great at the interview in terms of getting his dates wrong and sort of not understanding maybe that he was potentially in trouble or that he was going to be a suspect, being able to fake being bad at that and also be, as part of that, concealing that you're part of the crime. My takeaway was that they both sort of thought like, well, whatever's going on, I don't see that in this interview.
Yeah, and this process was really good for me. So the first time, and I'm sure a lot of you are this way too, the first time I heard the interview, I really kind of had a moment. I touched on it a little bit when I was talking with Dr. Scott and Dr. Shiloh, but I was like, man, he knows about the wheelbarrow. He's, you know, there's some problems here. Like, this is concerning. And then I've watched the video and then I listened again and I was still kind of starting to pull some pieces out. But in order to prep for that discussion, I went through the transcripts line by line by line. And because of doing that process, I came away, in my opinion, very, very confident that he wasn't lying. That he did cancel the hike. And there were little things that maybe you don't catch when you hear them, but when you're reading them, like, you know, I mentioned when he said, well, what do you think happened up there? And Robert says, well, we were discussing, I was asking him, you know, what do you think started it? And like that was a big one for me was, okay, like his immediate reaction to what happened was what started the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, really, really difficult to fake. That, you know, that I don't know that this was a crime. I don't know that someone did this. It seems like it was an accident and I don't know how it started.
Got it.
And there was a ton of little things like that throughout the interview.
Yeah, the whole sort of like he has guilty knowledge and stuff like that. I felt really comfortable that wasn't the case after the follow-up, even before this interview aired with Dr. Scott and Dr. Shiloh. But they certainly backed that up 100% with the whole sort of couldn't tell what sex the victims were and stuff like that. And I loved the moment where you finally revealed to them what Javi's dad did. And they were both like, oh.
Oh, there
well,
it is.
We don't ever have to talk about this again. Like it's 100% right. Clear where this came from. Like,
right.
They couldn't have been more sure.
And that seemed very obvious to me. And of course, this is not like a free pass for Robert or anything. We have a long way to go. We haven't even looked at anyone as a suspect yet. But as far as like where that information came from, you know, to me, it couldn't be more clear that the information that he shared about the wheelbarrow and about the bodies was all information that the police found after the fact that the killer couldn't actually know.
Right.
You know, unless they got that. So now that doesn't mean that he couldn't have still been the killer and then also got that information later. But that right. information he shared had to have come from someone who was investigating the scene after the fact.
And I just want to say, I mean, on behalf of the listeners, I think you know this because you've been very careful to kind of reiterate time after time that the reason that you had them analyze this wasn't because sort of from the perspective of him as a suspect. But you also know realistically, we're all going to still be thinking about that. And I know that that's right. not the point, but it's a little bit more you're asking more of the listener than usual by sort of saying suspend the fact that there's no way he's not a suspect and possibly is the person in prison.
Right.
But also, you know, try to listen to this for this other reason. Those things, like, we're not going to be able to tease those apart. Those are going to be things that we're all sort of, including Dr. Yeah. Scott and Dr. Shiloh, it's kind of impossible not to let those things enter your mind. So you sort of have to go, all right, I understand that the basic purpose of this is very early in the investigation, but of course we're still going to be thinking in terms of, is he lying? Is he not lying? Is he guilty? Is he not guilty? You know, that kind of thing. So I'm sure we'll come back to it, but I agree that it would be very strange of us to hone in on that when, again, there's just so much that we haven't found out about even the other people who were in the fire yeah. and stuff.
And this is obviously a tough one because we want to know for Becky's timeline if she went on this hike or not. Well, and we have Robert saying, oh, I canceled the hike. So that's, it's a good source of information to try to figure out, did he hike with her or not? But at the same time, like I said, you can't ignore the fact that if he's sitting in the police station telling them I canceled this hike and it turns out that he didn't and he actually went, that looks real, real, real bad for him
right.
as a suspect.
Right.
And I know that we can't completely pull apart and separate that, but that's just not where I want to focus now because we haven't even done a crime scene analysis yet.
Sure.
To be able to come back around to that. And we will be digging deeply into all these people. As suspects later on as we move forward with the investigation.
Great.
I think they both came to the opinion over the course of the interview too that Robert really avoided victim blaming. Like he kind of stayed away from blaming Becky. He didn't really want to say anything. You know, we talked about her smoking marijuana and if he didn't want to say that and then like if she was depressed and he stayed, you know what I mean? Like he didn't put any blame on her through kind of the whole interview.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was super interesting. And, part of what I kind of revealed at the end is stuff we're going to hear later. But I think it was important for that part of the conversation because there is this weird thing where he's saying, we talked to her, tried to be friends, but then, she brings in this drama every time and there's another guy and she's trying to make me jealous. And then the stuff where he's kind of like, kind of almost protecting her in that way and not talking about the smoking pot and all these different things. It was interesting to hear Dr. Scott's particularly reaction, when I shared with him that what we'll hear later is that her friends, including Javi, all say that she was obsessed with Robert and it was definitely not the other way around. I mean, I think in one interview, Javi says that she actually had like a shrine to Robert in her, room. So that, and that, all those light bulbs, like, oh, so maybe it doesn't mean that he's telling the truth, but it's like all of a sudden you put that in a little different context and it's like, oh, okay, well, that, I guess if that's true, what Javi and her friends are saying, then it could absolutely make sense that he is, you know, tries to be friendly, but knows that he can't get too close because she's obsessed with him.
Right. Well, let's be careful about using words like obsessed, because I feel like we just don't know enough yet. And
right.
I know you know more than we do, but I feel so terrible that this girl was killed anyway. And so I'll be interested to hear more about her. And I'm only saying that because it just makes me sad. And I don't know what a shrine looks like. It could literally be a guy's version of that could be like, oh, she had a picture of him and next to it was a sweater of his. Like, I don't, you know. So I'm interested to hear more about Becky. I think you're right, Zap. They really brought up some interesting ideas about behavior and about relationship dynamics. But those can be complicated even and especially between young people, because it's just kind of a confusing time to be a person growing. Like, your hormones are still going crazy when you're 17, 18, 19, 20. So let's get into the questions, because I think There are some really, really great points, as usual, in here, and some great questions that I think probably Zap and I would get to on our own, but we can use the listener as a way in. I want to go with Rebecca's comment first, just to kind of get your perspective on that. She says she really loves this podcast. She thinks, as a listener, this episode maybe could have done with a bit more production, maybe going back to excerpts of the interview that they were analyzing for continuity. She was wondering if that was something that you would consider in the future, or that, you know, there was a reason for not doing it. But just kind of, when you're talking about something, will we ever sort of cut to the clip of that and come back to it? Or in this case, was it more just kind of like, hopefully you listen to it. You don't have to like have memorized the interview yet. You can just sort of take it piece by piece.
Yeah, I hope that we were able to break down what we were talking about clearly enough. But as far as that, like, is it possible? Yeah. Was it possible for this episode? No. So just from a production standpoint, it's an organic, free-flowing conversation, so I can't have them prepped ahead of time.
Right.
So then that would have to be done post-production, and the amount of hours it would take to go through the interview and pull out each section we were talking about and plug that in and try to find logical places in the discussion to break the discussion and plug the pieces in. It's possible, but I mean, that would have been a 40-hour job.
Also, you guys were going out on assignment. I mean, I just listened to his interview right before I listened to the episode with Scott and Joe, so it was fresh in my mind. But that being said, Rebecca said they were great guests, really great guests. She likes the way they think. Would love to hear more from them. And Debbie asks, why did you ask the doctors to review Robert's statement only? Which was kind of covered, but...
Yeah, well, it was because... So, because a lot of people wanted to hear... We want to hear an analysis of Javier's statement. Or his interview. The thing was, you know, the relevant pieces for what we're doing now of Javier's statement was that Robert told me that he was supposed to go hiking with her and that he canceled. Well, Robert confirms, yes, I was supposed to go hiking with her and I told Javier we canceled. So there's no, I don't need to know if Javier was telling the truth or lying, because we know he was telling the truth about that.
Right.
You know, there could be other things in there that, you know, if you were looking at like Javi as like a suspect. But for what we were doing now, the part that's relevant to Becky's timeline was already confirmed by Robert. So we moved to the next place, which was Robert. And then the conflict comes in, is Robert telling the truth? And that's why we had him analyze Robert's interview.
Great. Well, I think, again, most of this feedback comes from everybody kind of being really interested in it and wondering, you know, for example, Rebecca does want to know, will they come back for more analysis? She would love to hear their opinion of Javi's interview, as you just said. Lauren says, have they gotten a chance to catch up on earlier episodes? And what are their thoughts? And will we hear them after maybe learning more about the case?
Yeah, I did. I think I saw on Twitter that Dr. Shiloh had said that she's catching up now, or it might have been Dr. Scott. I haven't talked to him since we did the interview. They both did say that, you know, they're more than happy to help in, you know, any way they can. So very likely as we move along, we'll have them come back on and help us along the way.
Great. Great. Kristen says, when Bob was explaining that Becky's friends said she smoked a lot of pot and that Robert doesn't, and he broke up with her because of that, Scott said, I find that very interesting, but he doesn't elaborate. Do you know why he thought that was interesting?
I can't speak for him. The way I took it was kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier, was that, you know, he was looking at the things Robert was saying about how the relationship was going or went over the summer. And for him to have that added piece of information kind of changes the way you look at that, I think. But I can't put words in Dr. Scott's mouth, but that's the way I took it.
Right. Yeah, to me that, again, you probably know a little bit more, but that still felt a little bit like speculation in terms of, you know, I didn't feel walking away from the interview that I could confidently say I knew that he was saying it was about other guys instead of about pot. If you say that comes up in other interviews, great. I'm sure we'll get to that.
Oh, but that part.
Yeah. Who knows?
I misunderstood the question. As far as how they broke up saying...
Oh, yeah. I don't think that was the question. I was just kind of expounding on it because we did have that conversation. It's built around this idea of perhaps he didn't want to throw her under the bus by revealing that she's a pot smoker, especially if she's still alive. He doesn't want her to get in trouble. So maybe he said the thing about other guys, you know, and that sort of reason being that like
her
that was the reason that they broke.
Yeah. Being about...
I have no opinion about that because I feel like I just don't have enough information and like I don't have no idea why why he did or didn't.
I think I think it was Claire who said that's why they broke up. Mm-hmm. But if I remember correctly, even she wasn't super like she didn't say, oh, he broke up with her because he didn't like that she smoked. I think she was like, I think it was because of the smoking that he didn't like. So yeah, I don't know. For certain, that's what, you know, all we have is the reason Robert says they broke up and when the reason Claire says they broke up. It's definitely not clear. I don't think that we can know one way or the other.
Right. Right. And then Kristen just kind of reiterated the question of, do you agree that Javi must have told Robert about the body in the wheelbarrow? I feel like we kind of established that you do think that must have been what happened.
I don't know. Yeah, I do believe I Robert didn't give me any indication that nor did he give Dr. Shiloh or Dr. Scott any indication that he was lying about that. I think that we've parsed out pretty clearly that information came from after the fact. Now, whether that came from Javi's dad or neighbors that were out there talking about, I don't know. But it to me, it seems pretty clear that the information came from things the investigators found after the fact. And Robert gave me no reason to not believe that it was Javi that gave him that information. And knowing that when we're looking at it from, you know, this is not guilty knowledge. Knowing what the police found that morning is not guilty knowledge. Then it doesn't, you know, who else would have told Robert that, you know, since this is after the fact information, you know, so it'd have been like, what did Claire tell him and not Javi? Like why there's no reason for him to lie about it. It's not guilty knowledge. He gave no indication that he was lying. So yeah, I personally believe that, yeah, Javi is the one that told him.
Got it. There's a little bit of both in the comments that have come in and a couple things in the chat, just kind of, you know, again, staying open-minded about Robert and about, you know, what was going on there in that relationship when it was happening. Sarah said, I would like to have heard some analysis regarding the allegation of Robert physically abusing Becky. It bothered me to hear him dismiss it as roughhousing. And there's a couple comments in the YouTube chat as well that sort of says, you know, he didn't necessarily completely step away from victim blaming. Maybe he was downplaying his relationship because he didn't want his girlfriend to know that something was still going on or whatever. So just, you know, some kind of wanting to remain open-minded from folks about what that relationship, the shape of that relationship and whether or not he was being completely honest.
Yeah, because he did say some negative things about, I mean, and that's, you know, when I go back to the reason they broke up. You know, her friend or Claire says that it was because she smoked and he didn't like it. He says because she was, well, I mean, personally, I'd rather somebody think that I broke up with them. You know, if you're trying to protect their character, would it be rather because they smoke or because they cheated? I mean, to me, you know, one's not. So the only thing that I thought there is maybe like these are cops. I don't want to tell the cops that she smoked.
And that may be the case. Also, you may not want to bring. If you're in that community and if you're any part of dealing or buying or anything like that, you may just, I'm not saying that's Robert, but like in general and something like this, you may just not want to bring drugs into it because you don't want it to go in that direction because whether or not it has anything to do with this, you don't need to be questioned about what you have in your bag, how much you paid for, you know what I mean? So it's might be easier for everyone if it's like, let's not bring pot into this.
And we heard the same thing from, you know, Javi. Well, I think Janelle was like, I don't know, she might be every once in a while smoke pot. I don't know. Javi doesn't say anything about her smoking pot, or and a matter of fact, I think he says she doesn't. And then Claire's like, oh, she smoked every day. You know, so like it wasn't uncommon for teenage friends to in that group to not let the police know that someone was smoking pot. You touched on at the beginning of that question about the whole roughhousing thing. A lot of people said, yeah, I don't like that he dismissed the allegations of abuse as roughhousing. I don't, if it was abuse, then yeah, I don't like that either. I guess what I'm getting at is we don't know. For all we know, it was roughhousing. You know, I have friends of the couples that will goof around and roughhouse with each other. I've never really done that. I'm too big to do that. I'll smash someone. But
you're big, tough, and strong.
Yeah.
I also feel like Becky could kick your ass, but whatever.
She probably could. I don't know if it was actually was roughhousing. So I'm mumbling over my words. We're saying he dismissed it as roughhousing. Well, if it was abuse, then yes, he's dismissing it as roughhousing. But if it actually was just roughhousing, then he's not dismissing anything. He's just telling them what it was. I don't know what to think about that.
But are they talking about the police officer dismissing it and not continuing asking about it? Because I feel like even if it was roughhousing, you would want some more clarification.
Oh, the officer should have followed up more. By the way, I took the question was they were asking, they didn't like the way that Robert dismissed it.
Yeah, that's how I took it too.
But that's a good point. Certainly it should be. I mean, she's dead, most likely murdered at that point.
Yeah, even if it was roughhousing, I feel like you would want some clarification. Well, what do you mean by roughhousing? What there's so much more that could have been added to that. That's the way I took that question, honestly.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Mary Ellen. Marilyn says, very interesting case so far. I think in this week's episode, you gave a shout out to Robert's mother, Kathleen, teasing her about not returning your texts for weeks. Can you expand on what type of relationship you have with Robert and his family, how long you've been in contact with him, and more? Will you be able to speak with the victim's family members as well? And that ties into Kim's question, which is essentially, I guess I realize you haven't said how you got involved. We know in the case of many Texas cases, we're talking about the Texas Innocent Project getting involved. A committee perhaps helped select this case, but how did it come to your attention? So just a general sort of what's your relationship to the case and how did it come to you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we'd discussed this before, but it was a listener-submitted case from someone who lived in the area, and our research team went through all the submissions, narrowed this down as one of the, you know, along with Pablo's case. There were two others that just didn't end up panning out that they narrowed down for one that we should look into. And when I started doing the next step of my initial research in the case, it seemed like a case that was ripe for reinvestigation. And so that's where we took it. As far as the family, my relationship with Robert, I talked to Robert on the phone once so far. His family has been, when I reached out to them when I've flown out there, and I've interviewed all of them, and so I've met them a couple times, and there was communication. So when we took the case, of course we reached out to Robert's family and said, because it wasn't submitted by them, and said we'd like to look into this case. So we did like a Zoom meeting. So I've met them all, and had some communication with them, enough that I know that it's hard to get a hold of Kathleen sometimes on the phone. As far as the victims' families, no, I still haven't had it. I sent off snail mail letters a while back. I've tried email letters. From what I'm finding publicly, I don't have any way of, I don't know if they're getting them and ignoring them or if they're not getting them. I don't know. But from people that are close to the family, it seems like they're just super not interested in anybody looking back into this again.
Well, and I mean, that's the majority, right? It's very unusual to have. I mean, yes, you had some with Jennifer's case. You were able to, speak to a member of the family. I felt like that was kind of unusual. And then in Sandy's case, the family is the family. The family is both.
Right.
So that felt like that was very unusual and kind of amazing access because of the specificity of that case. But, this to me, again, I have no idea if Robert is guilty, if anyone else is guilty, who might be incarcerated. I don't know anything about this case. Again, never Googled it. Have no knowledge. The conversations that we've already heard, it does remind me of Hay and Adnan. Hay's family certainly didn't want to have anything to do with that investigation for very understandable reasons. So I kind of never expect you to get access to the victim. It feels like it would be a surprise and a real benefit, but it just seems so unlikely given the pain that these families go through. And they're not the bad guys. They are told that the right person is there. So whether or not it's the right person, of course you need to believe that. So I'm never surprised if, you know, your work does not end up including a ton of engagement with the victim. But it's a great question to ask. And, you know, I'm glad Mary Ellen asked.
And historically, when we have had some access, like I said, the Liz Melgar or Liz Rose was an exception because she's kind of in the middle. But when I've had contact with victims' families, I've usually been told the same thing. Like, I just believe they got the right guy because that's who the police told us did it.
Sure.
And so I've never really thought much about it. So it's not super common for the family members of the victims to be like, oh, hey, let's dig this up again and look and see if they got the wrong person in prison. It's just not doesn't happen very often.
Right. Moving into kind of less focused on Dr. Scott and Dr. Shiloh's great analysis. Obviously, it's been established that many of us would love to hear from them again if they have time. And if it works for you and your plans. But Tiffany, going into Robert's interview, says the end of Robert's interview that was cut out because it was hard to hear. Can we hear that anyway to see if we could help work out what Robert was saying about the wheelbarrow?
Yes, I will. I'll include that at the end of this episode. So Mike is, and by the way, this is Mike's second to last episode he's editing. We have a new editor coming on, Kelly Behrens Brink. From the True Crime IRL podcast is taking over as our new editor. So welcome, Kelly.
Kelly.
Mike is editing this follow-up and Sunday's episode, and then he's officially an electrician after that. So, Mike, if you could, I will put in our Dropbox the clip after they've walked away. If you could just put that after the credits on this episode. So when you're listening to this after the credits, skip ahead and that should be there. It's real. I'll warn you, it's hard to hear much of anything, but I'll definitely put it on there for you.
Great. Rena, I just noticed this and it does feel timely based on what we were just talking about. Knowing cell phone service was very poor in the area, were police scanners / radios a popular thing? The doctors mentioned details that may have gotten out that way. That was before we told them who Javi's dad was. But it is a good question. Like, how common would it be up there, especially without cell service and stuff, to kind of be somebody who might have something like that to keep tabs on what's going on in the community or whatever?
I think it's anecdotal. It's hard to know. Okay. My dad still to this day has a police scanner sitting next to his, and we don't live in a remote area. He just is nosy, I guess, listens to all the police and fire and ambulance on a scanner all day long, has since I was little. I don't know. So I'm sure some people up there may have, some may not have. I don't know.
Pamela says, do we have more interviews to hear? I assume Robert was questioned again. Is there one with Kristen? Was Javier brought in for a formal interview? Was Jacob? And will we be hearing those as well?
Yeah, so there are lots more interviews to come. Robert is interviewed multiple times. Kristen's interviewed. Javier's interviewed multiple times. And we're going to get into all of that. You know, we've got kind of hung up for three episodes now on victimology. And spoiler, this Sunday is going to be hopefully the final episode on victimology because I found some more information that we need to get out. But you know, that's a process. It's
not about studied. Being hung up on it. I wish we had more victimology. You're about to say that Sunday is going to be packed full of information about Becky's mom and stepdad, then we should have had more. Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Sunday's episode, there are what I found was there are audio interviews in the file that there are no reports written on them.
Oh.
So as I've gone through all these police reports, I'm like, they didn't talk to anybody. And then I find these audio interviews in there where they just never made a report.
Okay.
And so this week's episode is going to be mostly about John and Vicky, more victimology there.
Good. Oh, that's really cool. That's great news. Great, great, great news.
And there's a lot more information there. There, you know, this is one of those cases where there are folks out there that have, you know, the little bit of it, they saw the 48 hours episode and they've seen a couple things that have been posted online. And I think they have this big broad certainty about what happened. There's so much to this case that that no one is aware of. You know, at the trial, the judge didn't allow anything to do with any alternate suspects to be brought up at the trial, which we're going to get into all that later.
Yeah.
But that made it so the easily publicly available records don't include anything except for the case against these two. So there's tons and tons and tons and tons of more information to come out. So
great.
Slow down. You know, the process is, it's going to be long, slow, and it always is. But in this case is super complicated, but it's victimology. And then we need to move into a full in-depth crime scene analysis, which is, you know, I've been itching to get to, but I'm doing the investigation, the order that it needs to be done. So it's a thorough victimology first, then the crime scene investigation, the medical evidence, the autopsy, any forensics. At that point, we'll want to do a profile, and then we'll start looking into pools of suspects, and then we'll start going down different paths of investigation from there following so we've got a long way to go. I don't remember where this question started, but this is where it's ending is
are there more interviews? So it was a broad question, and then you giving a big answer, and that's great.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot more interviews because we need to look at, and I'm not saying like Javier's a good suspect or Robert is or Robert isn't or anything, but anybody that's close to any of these people, any of the victims, needs to be looked at as a person of interest, at least to see should they be moved, should they be part of a suspect list? And then we just move on.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you came across some interviews because I think John and Vicky need to be looked at more.
Yes.
And it's just crazy that they didn't do anything about them.
Agreed.
So I'm happy to hear that you came across these interviews and we're going to hear some because that's a huge part of victimology. Even if Becky was the target, we still need to know more about these other two victims.
Right. And you know, the tricky part is, and that's what's been frustrating to me, is we didn't know anything about John and Vicky. And then there's like these, you know, throughout the case file, there's these random audio files that are in there. And they're also in kind of a weird form. I have to convert them to a format that I can listen to each individual file. And then there was just like these names. And so I found them. But I'm like, I don't know. There's these names of interviews. I have no idea who this person is. They're nowhere in the case file, nowhere in the trial transcript. And I start listening. I'm like, oh, that's John's boss.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a whole lot more of that coming this weekend. It's great. It's packed full of information, new information, and really gives us a broader look at victimology coming on Sunday.
Very cool. I wonder if I almost feel like towards the end of this season, it might be an interesting exercise to go back and sort of revisit these couple of episodes that have really focused around Robert's interview and how much we didn't know. And, you know, just kind of revisiting it, because I think that's the toughest part about you introducing it so early, is that it's really difficult to, again, as I said earlier, kind of separate out suspect behavior versus making sure that you can verify that something did or didn't happen. So I don't know. I think
right.
I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of swing back to it as a group and go, okay, remember how we were, this is what we were trying to pull out from these little pieces of information. Now we can look at it again with this much broader umbrella of information and see if we still feel the same way or see how we feel about it.
And what you just described there is the scientific method of investigation, precisely. It's a gathering of information, developing of a hypothesis, and then once we get more information, back test the theories against all of that, the broader picture. So there's going to be a lot of circling back. I have no formulated opinion on this case right now. I couldn't tell you who I think did it. I couldn't tell you who I think didn't do it. I really don't know. I'm going through this the same pace that you guys are.
Great. Kristen says, it's come up before, phone records, is that something that are going to be posted? You know, how are we doing with documentation that people want to dig into, that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's going to be at least a full episode, if not multiple episodes, on the phone records. This all has to be, like, parsed out. I have full phone records for Becky, for Becky's home phone, for Robert, for Christian, for Javier, for Jacob Santiago. We haven't talked about at all her boyfriend she broke up with 2 days before this. You know, we have all those phone records that, you know, and they don't say Robert called Becky. You know, it's called this phone number, spoke for this long, it went to voice, you know, so I'm charting all those out and highlighting and try to get to come up with a list of who was calling who when throughout this process. Because there's, you know, there's a lot of information out there that is that's like been posted online about phone records. Like they say, like the prosecution has said, like in the grand jury, that, you know, Robert lied in this police interview we just heard, says Robert lied in his police interview because he said that he hadn't talked to Becky in so long. And it was, when you break down the phone records, he said, I talked to her, Saturday? I hadn't talked to her for a while before that. Well, it was actually Thursday, 2 days before that, she had called him, and then he called her back, and they talked. But in the prosecution's case, like, is this huge deal that he lied to detectives and said he'd never talked to her before this day or whatever it says, and there's just a lot of details to come out.
Well, that could very much be a sign, as we know, again, from Anand's case, that you start pulling at anything you possibly can if you don't have much. And it can also be everything. It can mean everything. It can be super significant, or it can be a manipulation of a fact that is meaningless because you're grasping at straws trying to put it together. I mean, it could be anything. So, right. Yeah, let's all stay really open-minded about that. Valeria has a couple of real specific questions. That's kind of all I have, unless we do a last look through YouTube to see if there's stuff that hasn't been covered. But Valeria says, do we have any indication whether Becky had made arrangements to go sleep at Javi or Claire's after work that night? She seemed to do that pretty regularly. And if she was working a late shift, but maybe that would be something that would happen. But because neither of them mentioned it in the interviews, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. The idea of, you know, having friends that you stay over with a fair amount, and whether or not that could have made a difference. I guess it probably would have come up in one of their interviews. But
yeah, I haven't heard anything, and it's not a question the police have asked in anything that I've seen or heard so far. It's the impression I got was that there was never really a planned thing. From hearing Claire talk about it and Javi talk about it, sounds like she would be getting off work. I can tell you just from her phone records, she tends to text and talk to Javi a lot throughout the night while she's working. I don't know when Javi sleeps, but it kind of sounds like a lot of, okay, well, I'm off work, and can I come crash at your house or just show up at Claire's house? It doesn't sound like it was ever like a big plan where she was going the next morning. Sounds like she just kind of had an open invitation to both of those places.
Got it. Yeah. And then there, I know we're going to do crime scene analysis, but she also said, is it visible, like, her socks, to her shoes, anything indicating a hike or not a hike? We've touched on that, but I'm assuming we'll probably talk more in detail about the crime scene and the evidence that you could be gleaned from those various things.
Yeah. Obviously that'll be part of the crime scene analysis, will be all of those details where we can really try to piece together what physically happened at the house that night, which, you know, some of it's going to be tough. You know, the arsons are hard. Because, you know, you have, for example, the two bodies inside, Vicky and John, they're burnt beyond all recognition to the point where their limbs are gone. They can't tell what sex they are. And the entire house has fallen on top of them. Right. And so they're in a pile of rubble. It's impossible to know. We don't have a crime scene inside that we can piece it. So to jump back to season two, right, Elnora Griffin's case, we can look at the elements of that case and be like, ah. You can see here where, you know, that it looks like she was choked in this area. She looks like she broke free. You can see where she grabbed the curtain on the door, and you can see how that broke down. In this case, there's no possible way for us to know what happened in that house because all of that evidence is crumbled down on top of everything else.
Right.
But we've got a lot going on the outside of the house to help us paint a little bit clearer picture.
Well, it's certainly really, really exciting to know that we're going to have a little bit more information about those poor folks who are inside the house. That's really, really heartening. Whether or not it leads to something concrete, as Zap said, it's just really important to get as much out there as you can about what was going on and who those folks were. So I'm glad to hear that that's what we're going to be looking forward to next week. I'm really excited.
All right. So I think that's it And it looks like we've pretty much covered everything that's going on in the chat, too. So thank you all for tuning in. Remember, Wednesdays sometime around 12 o'clock noon Eastern time, depending on when we get done with the Patreon pre-episode. You can always join us on the YouTube chat. But if you're not in the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page, make sure that you get in there. Because that's where a lot of the questions of Janet's reading get pulled from, is from a post that we do there every week. And with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up. A couple little housekeeping things we have. So as I mentioned, Kelly Behrens-Brink from True Crime IRL will be our new editor starting next week. She's also handling a bunch of our social media, and she helped point out to me the fact that we don't have a Truth and Justice Instagram account. We only have my personal account. So she has created one. So I think there's two followers there right now. But for more official, instead of me, you know, out playing with my dogs posts, more official stuff about the show, just go to @TruthJusticePod on Instagram and you can join over there. Hopefully I'll be seeing a lot of you guys tomorrow at in Grand Rapids for our live show with the Captain and Kelly. And I think for now, that is it. Make sure you tune in on Sunday for more information on victimology. We're really going to dig much deeper into John and Vicky. And I think that is it. Zach and Janet, thank you guys so much. And we shook the cobwebs off. You know, maybe we'll do better next week.
I'm so glad you're back. I'm glad you had fun. I'm glad you're back.
NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Mike Bussing, and all music for the show is created and composed by PutThemInASong.com. Our follow-up logo was created by me, and all of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. Follow our personal accounts on social media. I can be found in all forms @BobRuffTruth. Janet can be found @JanetVarney. And Zach is @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. As for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Sorry, man. I appreciate you coming down. Sometimes we do in these cases is we just you know, we have to ask everybody a bunch of questions that may not have anything to do with the scene in case something does end up coming up or whatever. You know, this could be, you know, an accident, it could be whatever, but we have to treat it, obviously, as though it's not until we find out it is, you know. So that's why we ask everybody these questions and see what's going on. We prefer, obviously it's going to be hard, you guys are pretty young, and young people unfortunately love to talk to each other and speculate and do all that kind of stuff. And when people speculate, what ends up happening is the speculation becomes rumor and fact, you know, the whole wheelbarrow thing you brought up, stuff like that. You know, it's just... So, the best thing to do is just if people ask you, you know, what we talk to you about or whatever, don't try and derive anything from the questions I ask you, because I guarantee you, you know, there's nothing in there. Because right now we're just asking a general battery of questions that we ask everybody in every instance like this, you know? So don't try and make anything of it, and let's just see what happens, and you'll, I'm sure, find out before anybody else, with being close to people who are close to you. You know what? I haven't been to the thing, but that's the first I've heard of it, what you said. I mean, that would seem kind of bizarre to me.
Pretty bad. I mean, it doesn't
see, that's the problem with things like that, is people say stuff, and then it may just be a rumor. It could have been someone at the scene who couldn't see but was just guessing or whatever, and it turns into fact, and yeah, that doesn't sound good, you know, so. Tell people don't speculate. No. If you weren't there, you don't know. All right, it's nice to meet you, Robert.
Nice to meet you.
Take care.
You too.
Michael's concluding that interview. It is 5:57 p.m. on 9/18.